1978.
Now, my father, Louis Hillerson, had one real brother, and I just remember him slightly. Mm-hmm. And a niece came over from Russia, my father's really niece and really a first cousin of mine on the Hillerson side, and she was a doctor, and we've never kept up this friendship, but I understand she died just a couple of weeks mm-hmm. ago. She was quite much older than I am. And Papa had been like half-brothers. You know, there was a lot of yeah. half-brothers and half-sisters. And Papa had, I didn't tell you all about my mother's family, did you? But I had it on that mm-hmm. tape, on Danish tape.
Yeah, it sounded fairly complicated.
Did it?
But I didn't understand.
But I can tell you some of that another time. But anyway, Papa, Louis Hillerson, then had, now I have to think, he had one half-brother, Dave Hillerson, who was written up in the papers as Dean of the Jewelers on Sansom Street in Philadelphia. He was a jeweler and made nice jewelry. And when I was a little girl, I'd go there and he'd give me a gold bracelet. And then after a while, the gold bracelet either didn't fit or it broke or something. I'd go back there again and ask him to fix it, so he'd give me another gold bracelet. And then there was Uncle Morris, who was a dentist. Then there was Uncle Israel. I forget what Uncle Israel did. Who else was there? Uncle Morris, Uncle Dave, and Uncle Israel. I think that's all. And then one real brother. These were all half-brothers. And so that's all of the Hillersons. Then, of course, Uncle Dave had children, a boy and a girl, and Uncle Morris had children. So there are some Hillerson. But one of the Hillerson boys was the one that was killed D-Day mm-hmm. while his wife was in the hospital having their first child.
Oh,
yeah. So that, and then two brothers were a dentist. There's only one left now. He lives in Virginia now. And they were all musicians, though, except the oldest one. They went to Temple University and they had a band called the Royalists, and they used to play during their college days a lot. And they had one girl. Uncle Morris had one girl and she died of cancer. She was a school teacher too, I think. And Uncle Israel had a boy and a girl, and I think they live in Washington. I haven't kept up with the family, but that's all I know about. You know, I don't know about Papa's mother and father or anything like that, and I feel awful about that because I wish I'd known. I didn't think to ask questions, I guess. I don't know. Well, if I think of anything else, okay. And you can edit out anything you want. Yeah, it sounds facetious. Edit it out. Yeah. So that's all I can think of today.
I think it's so fascinating for me to learn all these different relationships that were in the community that more or less still exist today, but I wasn't aware of how they started.
Yes. Well, see, like Dr. Barsky, well, see, his father and I were first cousins. His grandmother and my mother were sisters. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the only other of my relatives in Wilmington are Sonia Sloan. Mm-hmm. And she's my sister's younger daughter. And that's all the relatives I have. And, of course, the Barskys have a son and a daughter. Mm-hmm. But, I have a cousin, Sarah Stolberg, who's 88 years old. And she lives in the Mayfair, but she's only lived in Wilmington. In the early days, when she came to this country, she lived with my mother. Mm-hmm. And she was a big, buxom, country-looking girl. And I remember her very well because she stayed with us. But then they moved to Philadelphia, and she was a social worker there in Philadelphia. And then she lived at the Mayfair now for 20 years. So, but she knows a lot of people in Wilmington, you know, through just, well, we cousins were very close, yeah. Very close. So it was great. Well, anything else I can tell you, think about?
Were you aware, okay, along with this World War II business, of any anti-Semitism during that time, or any time previous?
When? During which time?
Maybe during World War II, before World War II, or any other time of any anti-Semitism maybe shown towards you or your family?
Before World War II.
Or any other time.
Of course, you knew there were certain clubs you didn't get into, you know, I mean, but we weren't in that financial bracket anyway, so it didn't mean anything to. No, I'll tell you, I never felt it because through playing a lot, but I got invited as a player to mm-hmm. play at all these things. Socially, I never, the only time I felt it with one teacher in a school in junior high, but that was after 1933, long after. And not, oh, I don't know, maybe. And she would make some anti-Semitic remarks. Not me, because I'm different. Mm-hmm. You love that, don't you? I'm different. That used to gripe me. I always say, yes, I'm different because I come from a different mother and father than you do. That's how I'm different. You know? But the anti-Semitic remark was not directed to me, but to another Jewish person. But I stood up for the other, you know, and I said, well, if that's the way you think of a Christian, I'm going to fall down on my knees. Thank God I'm a Jew, because I don't think like that. I don't think that way about people at all. So that's the only, there might have been, mm-hmm. but I just wasn't aware of it because it didn't mean anything to me. I mean, I went where I needed to go, and I played every place. Nobody said, she can't play in this particular club because she's Jewish or something. I never had that feeling. And I played in all the churches. They certainly knew I was Jewish, you know. And they always treated me very well. In fact, I played at Harrison Street Church Sunday School. They had a Sunday School orchestra with a couple of professionals and then whoever could play from the Sunday. And I played there for many years out at 7th and Harrison Street, a Methodist church. And every year they would increase my, that was when we first moved out to Arden. It was before this house. We rented a place for a year. And they raised me every year, and they were as nice as they could be to me. Everybody was always nice to me. But I think I wasn't looking for anything, you know? Sometimes you go in looking for something. And I don't remember looking for anything, you know? I wasn't brought up that way. I don't know how my mother managed it, but she managed everything. I remember when I was in, we called it grammar school. Mm-hmm. I must only do this and then I should go because I don't want to keep it. I was in grammar school and there was an ugly looking boy sat in back of me. And I know what he looks like to this day. And that was when I was like 12 years old, right? And he sat in back of me. He had glasses. He was homely looking. I remember his face. And he always used to lean over and say, Jew, 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 Jew. And so I came home and told my mother, you know. And Mama said, that's okay. Turn around and tell him, that's right. That's what you are. You're very happy about it. You're very proud about it. But I can remember that.
That's great that your parents had that.
Now my, guess what my mother did? Now, to show you how Jewish we really were, and yet, as I say, we mixed with everybody, I evidently recited well. I don't know. And the teacher wanted me to recite at a certain time in the year the Holy Grail. So I came home, and I showed Mama the poetry, and I have to memorize it, and I have to recite. And Mama says, now, you go tell your teacher you're a little Jewish girl and you don't want to recite, that it isn't fitting for you to recite the Holy Grail. Mm. Today, I guess there wouldn't be anything. That took a lot of courage, right? So I went in, I told the teacher, and the teacher was really mad. And she gave me a D. D was like the low mark you could get. Mm. Here she had called upon me to recite in the whole auditorium. And because my mother said, so you see, there was a kind of a feeling, right? Mm. There was a standing up for what was proper for you to do and what was not proper. And the funny part was that another Jewish girl recited it. But my mother had, you know, high principles. But that's interesting. But that boy did make my life miserable. And then I can remember one time, it was Passover, and I was still in that school, And a kid gave me a jelly bean. And I came home and I said, Mama, I forgot all about I ate a jelly bean today. Oh. So you can see why we weren't brought up in an Orthodox home or anything like that, yet we were aware.
Sure.
And I can remember walking from Temple. You know, we always had intermissions at Yom Kippur,
right,
and the Martha Washington store. And I was walking with a group of Jewish girls, a half a dozen of us, and they went into Martha Washington and bought candy on Yom Kippur, and I would not eat it. See, and this is nothing that my mother said you shouldn't do. I just absorbed it in the household, that there were things you did and things that you didn't do. And to this day, and I'm really, you know, I don't run to Temple like I used to, because I don't drive at night and I don't always like to impose on my, but to this day, of course I teach on Saturday. Friday night I won't write. Friday night I won't sew. Saturday I wouldn't sit down and sew anything if it were absolutely necessary to do, I would do it, and I wouldn't feel guilty about it. Mm-hmm. But if I don't have to do it, I won't do it. You know, if it's not an absolute necessity, if I put on a slip and something needs to be done to it, then I take that slip off. I won't do it on Shabbos, but I'll wear something else. But if that were the only slip I had, I'd do it.
Yeah.
You know, so those are the priorities. But it's just, and I say my prayers every night. All these years, I say my prayers every night. I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night and say, oh, I didn't say them, I better say them. But so that our religion has been a very beautiful part of our life, I think. But it hasn't been a dogmatic kind of thing.
No.
That, if you didn't do this, if you didn't do that, yeah, right, go down there. It hasn't been that kind of a religion at all. So I think it's, and religious music, I did a lot of work in the hospitals with glee clubs, and that was really work for me. But to do the choir work, it was work, but I never had to get myself into an environment for it.
Mm-hmm.
But like these other things at the hospitals, all those things I had to do, I had to push myself and get myself ready for it. But for the Jewish music, it just was comfortable for me. And while I can't speak Hebrew, which is a shame, I'm ashamed to say, but the music meant that much to me, and I got the sense out of the music rather than anything else. Listen, I'm awful sorry.